Geologists did a hasty survey and discovered that a large area of the park had developed an ominous bulge. This was lifting up one end of the lake and causing the water to run out at the other, as would happen if you lifted one side of a child's wading pool. By 1984, the whole central region of the park, several dozen square miles, was more than 3 feet higher than it had been in 1924, when the park was last formally surveyed. Then, in 1985, the whole of the central part of the park subsided by 8 inches. It now seems to be swelling again. The geologists realized that only one thing could cause this, a restless magma chamber. Yellowstone wasn't the site of an ancient supervolcano. It was the site of an active one. It was also at about this time that they were able to work out that the cycle of Yellowstone's eruptions averaged one massive blow every 600,000 years. The last one, interestingly enough, was 630,000 years ago. Yellowstone, it appears, is due. It may not feel like it, but you're standing on the largest active volcano in the world. Paul Doss, Yellowstone National Park geologist, told me soon after climbing off an enormous Harley-Davidson motorcycle and shaking hands when we met at the park headquarters at Mammoth Hot Springs early on a lovely morning in June. A native of Indiana, Doss is an amiable, soft-spoken, extremely thoughtful man who looks nothing like a National Park Service employee. He has a graying beard and hair tied back in a long ponytail. A small sapphire stud graces one ear. A slight paunch strains against his crisp Park Service uniform. He looks more like a blues musician than a government employee. In fact, he is a blues musician, harmonica, but he sure knows and loves geology. "And I've got the best place in the world to do it," he says, as we set off in a bouncy, battered four-wheel drive vehicle in the general direction of Old Faithful. He has agreed to let me accompany him for a day as he goes about doing whatever it is a park geologist does. The first assignment today is to give an introductory talk to a new crop of tour guides. Yellowstone, I hardly need point out, is sensationally beautiful, with plump, stately mountains, bison-specked meadows, tumbling streams, a sky-blue lake, wildlife beyond counting. "It really doesn't get any better than this if you're a geologist," Doss says. "You've got rocks up at Bear Tooth Gap that are nearly 3 billion years old, three-quarters of the way back to Earth's beginning. And then you've got mineral springs here," he points at the sulfurous hot springs from which Mammoth takes its title, "where you can see rocks as they're being born. And in between, there's everything you could possibly imagine. I've never been any place where geology is more evident or prettier." "So you like it?" I say. "Oh, no, I love it," he answers with profound sincerity. "I mean, I really love it here. The winters are tough and the pay's not too hot, but when it's good, it's just..." He interrupted himself to point out a distant gap in a range of mountains to the west, which had just come into view over a rise. The mountains, he told me, were known as the Gallatins. "That gap is 60 or maybe 70 miles across. For a long time, nobody could understand why that gap was there. And then Bob Christensen realized that it had to be because the mountains were just blown away. When you've got 60 miles of mountains just obliterated, you know you're dealing with something pretty potent. It took Christensen 6 years to figure it all out." I asked him what caused Yellowstone to blow when it did. "Don't know. Nobody knows. Volcanoes are strange things. We really don't understand them at all. Vesuvius in Italy was active for 300 years until an eruption in 1944, and then it just stopped. It's been silent ever since. Some volcanologists think that it is recharging in a big way, which is a little worrying because 2 million people live on or around it, but nobody knows." "And how much warning would you get if Yellowstone was going to go?" He shrugged. "Nobody was around the last time it blew, so nobody knows what the warning signs are. Probably you would have swarms of earthquakes and some surface uplift and possibly some changes in the patterns of behavior of the geysers and steam vents, but nobody really knows. So it could just blow without warning." He nodded thoughtfully. "The trouble," he explained, "is that nearly all the things that would constitute warning signs already exist in some measure at Yellowstone. Earthquakes are generally a precursor of volcanic eruptions, but the park already has lots of earthquakes, 1,260 of them last year. Most of them are too small to be felt, but they're earthquakes nonetheless." A change in the pattern of geyser eruptions might also be taken as a clue, he said, but these too vary unpredictably. Once the famous geyser in the park was Excelsior Geyser. It used to erupt regularly and spectacularly to heights of 300 feet, but in 1888 it just stopped. Then in 1985 it erupted again, though only to a height of 80 feet. Steamboat Geyser is the biggest geyser in the world when it blows, shooting water 400 feet into the air. But the intervals between its eruptions have ranged from as little as 4 days to almost 50 years. If it blew today and again next week, that wouldn't tell us anything at all about what it might do the following week, or the week after, or 20 years from now, Doss says. The whole park is so volatile that it's essentially impossible to draw conclusions from almost anything that happens. Evacuating Yellowstone would never be easy. The park gets some 3 million visitors a year, mostly in the three peak months of summer. The park's roads are comparatively few, and they are kept intentionally narrow, partly to slow traffic, partly to preserve an air of picturesqueness, and partly because of topographical constraints. At the height of summer, it can easily take half a day to cross the park and hours to get anywhere within it. Whenever people see animals, they just stop wherever they are, Doss says. We get bear jams, we get bison jams, we get wolf jams. In the autumn of 2000, representatives from the U.S. Geological Survey and National Park Service, along with some academics, met and formed something called the Yellowstone Volcanic Observatory. Four such bodies were in existence already in Hawaii, California, Alaska, and Washington, but oddly, none in the largest volcanic zone in the world. The YVO is not actually a thing, but more an idea, an agreement to coordinate efforts at studying and analyzing the park's diverse geology. One of their first tasks, Doss told me, was to draw up an earthquake and volcano hazards plan, a plan of action in the event of a crisis. There isn't one already, I said. No, afraid not. But there will be soon. Isn't that just a little tardy? He smiled. Well, let's just say that it's not any too soon.